And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello, and ho, ho, ho. We are a couple of days away from Christmas. Today is Wednesday, December 21st. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm here with Darren. I'm here with Kevin. Please listen to us any way you get your podcasts. Please like, subscribe, hit that button, and give us a good rating. Follow us on Facebook. Send us posts and thoughts. Give me some stuff to talk about. Today, we're going to talk to you about some sports. Tonight, we're going to start with some baseball. We're going to talk about our New York teams. Last Thursday, the Yankees wind up signing Carlos Rodon. It is a six-year contract. The total is 162. It's probably right in the range they wanted. They got him. It solidifies the Yankee starting rotation. We'll talk about that. And then last night, it was a 3 a.m. bomb that exploded when the Carlos Correa deal with the San Francisco Giants died. They quoted, due to medical concerns that arose during his physical, the contract is gone. It was 13 years. It was $350 million. And in swiped Cohen, 12 years, $315 million. I guess he's going to play third base for the Mets. It's a huge, huge deal. It puts them in major contention pieces. They've signed 9 free agents so far. The total he has committed is $806 million. It's Correa and Nimmo and Diaz and Verlander and Senga. Quintana, Narvaez, Ottavino, Robinson. The total is $806 million. Kev, why don't you talk to me about the Mets to start?
Wow. What? That was wow to wake up to this morning. There's no other way to say it. That came out of left field. That was just a total shock. You know, here I was happy that we re-signed Ottavino. I thought, okay, you know, nice little bullpen move. Yeah, it's in the bullpen. And all of a sudden, damn, here comes Carlos Correa falling into the Mets' laps. Apparently, Stevie Cohen doesn't mind taking a chance on the medical. Now, this is assuming he passes the Mets' form of the physical. But I guess when you're worth $18 billion, what's, you know, $300 million?
The only – so here's the thing, right? The only thing I can try to figure out from this is that the Giants found something in the report, and if it is the back like what was reported originally, the Giants were like, well, we're worried that after year 4 or 5, there's going to be a major problem. I don't think Cohen's concerned at all, and I think that's the difference. Honestly, that's the only thing we can gather from what we've already known. So,
the Giants now, doctors were going to pass him. The Giants doctors were going to pass him in the physical anyway. It wasn't like they were holding up the deal completely. They expressed concern. Sorry, Kev. Yeah. I didn't realize. Go for it.
I was going to say, Cohen's doing what he said he was going to do. He's going to spend the money to build a winner now, bring in the free agents, and he's still, at least publicly stating, he still wants to build the farm system, still wants to eventually get the pipeline, almost do it like the Dodgers do as the model. You know, the Dodgers bring up their prospects. They let them play and then fill in where they need to with expensive free agents. And that's the model that Cohen wants to get to.
I think with everybody wants that one, Kev.
Obviously. But he's got the money to take care of the short term of just saying, I've got a hole here. Let me go and spend the money to fill it.
I got a great one for you, Kev.
Yep.
Over the last 3 years, the New York Mets have spent a total of $1.6 billion. The second team on that list is the Yankees at $833
million. So before the Correa deal, the Mets' estimated payroll was going to be about $335 million. Something we've never really seen before.
No.
I mean, here's the thing, you know, they've watched, and Met fans have every right to be happy about this. They've watched the guys in the other borough in the Bronx do this for years. And Gino gets mad at me and makes fun of me about my homegrown love. But you know what? It's a fine line. You've guaranteed yourself with these moves. You've guaranteed yourself October baseball. You know, for them, with the manager they have and the players you – when you have an infield of Alonso and Correa at the corners with Lindor and McNeil in the middle, just right there you have a monster squad. Then you sit there, you throw in Nimmo, who you got back, who could be a little fragile, but he's still – when he's playing, he's great. You have Marte out there. I mean, you have so many weapons on this team that you basically have guaranteed yourself October. Now, the Dodgers went on that spending spree for years. The Yankees have been doing it forever. Yankees haven't won a title since 09. The Dodgers haven't won it. They won one title, and it was the COVID year. So it's like it's never a guarantee that you're going to win, because if the two horses don't pitch in October, they're not going to win, right? It doesn't really matter how great the lineup is for the most part. That's just where we are in baseball now. But as a Met fan, you can't be anything but stoked about this. It's amazing.
And you're hoping, you know, I'm sure I'm like a lot of Met fans, that you know my favorite players in the Mets are still going to be Alonso and Nimmo and McNeil, the homegrown guys. Like you said, Devin. I'm agreeing with you. Those are still my favorite Mets. They're the ones that you've seen drafted, that you've watched in the minor leagues, that you've, you know, excited about. I'm still waiting to see Alvarez come up at some point this year and be the catcher every day. And now I'm rooting that, you know, Brett Beatty gets to just be the left fielder.
Yeah, exactly.
And you look and you go, okay, you know, you've got Mark Hanna out there this year. Well, if Beatty starts hitting, if he can show he can handle left field, you bring him up and you have him in left field, and Hanna becomes, you know, your fourth outfielder.
I am excited to win. I don't care if they're from my minor leagues or from the team across town. But Darren, listen, Darren's right, though. And, you know, I've been saying this for years. You know, all the spending, all you're doing is getting in the playoffs. That's what you're trying to do. You want to get in the playoffs, and once you're in, I say this all the time, get in the playoffs, and then it's a crapshoot. You're going to win some years. You're going to lose some years. Maybe you'll win a round. You win two rounds. You hope you win a World Series. You hope you win two World Series. But it's a crapshoot once the playoffs start. But you do all this to get yourself to October. Now, I want to just throw some at you because this – when all this happened and I saw all this happen this morning, I had, like, visions of the whole A-Rod scenario years ago. A little different, okay? But – all we heard that year was he's going to the Red Sox, he's going to the Red Sox, he's going to the Red Sox, and then, boom, all of a sudden he was a Yankee. And it was like, wait a minute, he's a shortstop. Well, he's going to play third. And it's this. I got really strong similarities with this whole situation. It was like, he's a Giant. No, snap, he's not a Giant, he's a Met. Wait, we have a shortstop. No, we're going to play him at third. And boom. And listen, this is huge for the Mets. If you had any doubts about solidifying the middle of that lineup, you just did it with one snap of the fingers. I mean, this is a huge, huge deal.
Yeah. So. We won't talk about tonight, but, you know, when we start doing, you know, some of our hot stove stuff and look a little closer at Yankees and Mets and lineups, it's going to be interesting to see how they set the lineup.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the Met lineup's going to be fun. It's going to be like, you know, somebody's going to have to drop to the five spot or the six spot that you're not expecting. And it's just one of those things where, you know, because they still don't have the atypical leadoff hitter. I guess the closest thing is McNeil, if you want to go there. You know,
it's still going to be Nimmo.
Well, it could be Nimmo, too. That's true. You could go
he's got lifetime 380 on base. That's why he's down in leadoff. He can't steal a base.
I was thinking more on the speed side. I like McNeil because he hits so well for average. And he's now the lost cause in the infield. He's the guy like, he's now the weak link, which you would have never thought of, because that's how good the other three guys are.
Yeah. unless you decide to hit Marte first, or you start, or because now you have all this middle power, maybe you wind up hitting Lindor first. I mean, you could play this a number of different ways, and we'll definitely get into it.
Yeah.
Let's go across town. Let's talk about some Yankees. Darren? They bring in Rodon, so.
Loved it, actually. You know what? Now I feel, you know, my rotation's as good as anybody's right now. When I go Cole, Rodon, and Severino, 1, 2, 3, Severino's always a huge question mark. Don't get me wrong. But he looked good when he came back. Let's see what happens this year. And then you have Cortez, who pitched really well last year. And you have Montez. You have two lefties. Rodon's only 30. which is something that you like. You got him for 27 a year, which is not an overpay, but it's not an underpay. No, yeah, you know, for the way it's going right now, you feel really good about yourself in the short season. Last year, it was all about, you know, Cole and, oh, man, I'm hoping Nestor can do something. And, oh, what happens if we have to pitch Taillon, who I didn't dislike, but he just wasn't that good. So now suddenly, well, the Yankees had two bits of news. You know, you had Rodon, and then today, you know, Judge the signing, and then Jeter's there, and they hand over the captaincy. And you know what's so funny? Judge becomes the captain, making $40 million a year, and the biggest sports story belonged to the Mets anyway. How often does that happen? I'm just saying. It was really cool as a Yankee fan to see Judge and Jeter together and that thing. And it was emotional for some people. I saw people crying. I didn't think it was that big a deal, but some people were actually crying about it. But it was like really cool. But the Correa move, because let's put it this way. The Giants had, what, Judge for about 6 minutes, and then for about 6 days they had Correa, yeah. Right?
Yep.
So every Met fan should send him $6. And every Giant fan $6 and say, here you go, here's your six. Or every Yankee fan should do the same. They'll get 12. Well, maybe we split it, three each. Whatever it is, it's just where did the Giants go from here? You know, it's the most they lost out on Correa. They lost out on everybody else they went for, and they allowed Swanson. They weren't even in the bidding because they thought they had their guy. So now the Giants make no moves at all. And it's a big market team that's trying to catch the Dodgers and the Padres. And what they did this offseason, they're not going to.
And they lost Rodon.
And they lost their best pitcher. You know, I mean, it's you know, they had an awful. They get an F in the offseason. And I'm not saying that if that may not be right, you know, about the whole Correa thing in 4 or 5 years. But you got to love Stevie Cohen, smarter than the Giants. I'm not going 13 years. I'm only going 12. You're done when you're 40. I'm not paying you till you're 41. That's right. I'm shrewd. And he got him for less money per year, too. He did a great job. He really did.
It's the same stuff that everybody used to complain about with the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 10 years ago, this would have been the Mets announcing a signing and the Yankees swooping in and signing Mark Teixeira to 7 year, or CC Sabathia. It's that type of move. And listen, this is it. I mean, Kev, you wanted the Mets to be a player. They're a player now. This is it, man.
They are.
If you're not getting excited, listen, I'm getting excited. I'm a Yankee fan. If you're not getting excited as a Met fan, I don't know what the hell to tell you. You and my cousin Paul, I don't know what to tell you guys now.
We're not owned by the Wilpons anymore.
That's for sure.
Here's the thing that's going to be funny, because there's still Ohtani out there, and both of these teams are still going to be in the bidding for that next year.
Oh, yeah.
Just imagining what that's going to be. But can you imagine what ticket prices for both of these franchises are going to be in 2024? I mean, the 23 ticket prices are set. You know, they're going to charge $50 to park. I mean, they're going to have to do something to recoup this. I mean, a World Series changes a lot. And you know what?
Yeah.
If you don't think the Mets are the front runner now, you're crazy. I think they are. I mean, you got two elite pitchers. Again, like you've heard my arguments. Neither look good in the postseason, all right? And they're old.
Yep.
But the back of their baseball card tells you that they're great, right? And you have an entire lineup, with the exception of left field and catcher, basically, that is an all-star team. And left field is you have enough options there, and you have a young catcher you're dying to bring up anyway.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you got a fat bastard named Vogelback playing first base that can hit the right-handed pitching with an occasional home run. He's a good DH. So you got a lot of little things happening over in City. And you know what? It's fun. When the Mets are good and the Yankees are good, this city is fun. And yeah, you know absolutely. What? It's going to be a lot of fun this year.
It's going to be a lot of fun as we get in there. We had a lot of different signings all over baseball. Darren, you want to hit on a couple of them?
Well, I mean, the Dansby Swanson one was the biggest one. He went 7 for $177 to the Cubs. So the Cubs finally joined the foray of all these free agent moves. I mean, they had Taillon. I mean, they picked up a couple of guys. You know, they're a big market team. The Cubs are supposed to be competitive in this stuff, and they just haven't been. Don't take it the wrong way, Kev. They're acting like the Mets of 6 years ago.
Yep.
It was good to see them try to make a move now and try to make it solidified, because when the Cubs are good, baseball's fun. That Cub-Cardinal rivalry is fun. It just is.
And that's not a great division. So no, the Cubs can be right back in it.
Anybody can win that. You know, Joey Gallo got $1 million more than J.D. Martinez. I thought that was great. Joey Gallo, he had the 140 batting average, got 1 year, $11 million with the Twins. They're going to try to find something there. And J.D. Martinez got 1 year, $10 million with the Dodgers. Dodgers have done very little this offseason. They really haven't done much. Kept Kershaw, a couple other little moves, but J.D. Martinez is a nice bat to have on their lineup. He's not going to be relied on too heavily. He's old. He's 35, but, you know, he still can play.
Basically, J.D. replaces Turner.
That's it.
That was almost a trade.
Turner goes to Boston and gets more money than J.D. got.
Which I don't understand.
And Turner's 4 years older. You know, listen, we all like Justin Turner. He started as a Met. We all thought, you know, I remember watching him play games against the Dodgers in that series where he was like all over the place when he was like a young player. So he went to Boston. Matt Carpenter goes to San Diego on a 2-year deal. You know, I thought San Diego probably overpaid a little bit for a guy that didn't hit 200, but
I mean, except for Carpenter discovering this stroke last year in Yankee Stadium, how is he going to hit, Petco?
He's not. He hasn't hit in 3 years outside of that stretch, and he was amazing in that stretch. He really was. He was carrying the Yankees for a little bit. It's just it's a move that doesn't make any sense as a Padre fan. I didn't really like it. And you know, I mean, those are the big ones. Hosmer being DFA'd, I was a little surprised about as well. Was one that I thought that was a little strange. Yeah.
One other big one, Benintendi to the White Sox.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Five for 75.
$15 million a year for Benintendi.
Well, I don't know.
The White Sox have made a couple moves. They are trying because again, that's a division that's winnable.
But the way he's been playing the last couple of years, don't you think Benintendi's more like a 2-year contract guy?
The high would have been 3, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I would have guessed that he was going to get a deal 3 for 50, 3 for 48. They got him for 15 a year for 5. I thought it was about a $16 million player just because that's what they pay now. Not because he deserves it, but that's what they pay.
The 15 per year, I think, is accurate.
Yeah, I was going to say, I had 16 in my head. But, yeah, 15 is fine. I just thought it was a shorter-term deal. I didn't think he'd go higher than 3 to see if he stayed healthy, A, and B, if he was going to return to form because he wasn't exactly great at the end of his Red Sox career. Really didn't do anything with the Royals. And with the Yankees, he was kind of nothing as well.
A singles hitter.
Yeah. A couple of other moves. We saw Brantley re-sign with Houston. So that kind of takes care of any other Yankee outfield gets with Benintendi and Brantley off the market. There's a couple they may trade for. We've heard some rumors. We'll see what happens. And then the other Padre move was they signed Seth Lugo.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't officially signed him, but that deal is basically done from what I'm told, 2 years, right, with Lugo for 15, was it?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm happy to get him in my bullpen. Well, they're going to give him a chance to start. That's why they got him. Otherwise, Lugo would have went elsewhere. But he's going to have a shot to go for the fifth spot, and it's not impossible to get. The fifth man in that rotation right now is going to be Mohoran, who is nobody special. So if Lugo pitches well, he will start. We'll see what happens. I mean, you know, I thought Hosmer being DFA'd surprised me at 33. I figure somebody's going to make a run at him because he can still play, and he's still a weapon for some team that might want a first baseman that actually is a very good clutch hitter, but not a great player every day.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, that's just kind of – but in a big spot, the guy comes through all the time.
The Mets will sign him.
Well, listen, I mean, the Mets will throw him another $15 million a year like it's nothing. But you know what? Enjoy it. You know, as a Yankee fan, whenever we wanted a player, it seemed like we went out and got him. Though I didn't always agree with the philosophy as much as others did, I get it. I remember sitting there one day with a guy I used to work with, and I remember when Joe Mauer was coming up on the free agency, and we had just signed everybody. And he's like, oh, we should get Mauer too. I'm like, come on, how rich do we have to get? And that was right before he started to deteriorate and not become the player he was. And he's like, what, are you kidding me? What's wrong with you? We get the best guy. I'm like, and yeah, I don't know. I kind of like to see it a little bit fair. We're becoming English Premier League soccer. You know, the good teams keep going, and everybody else fights for relegation.
Oh, what a segue!
Exactly. Hence, I used it.
So let's head that direction. We saw the World Cup final. Argentina beat France 4-2 on penalty kicks. Let me give you a little recap, and then we can talk about some stuff. So Messi scored in the 23rd minute on a penalty kick. And then Di Maria scored in the 36th minute. It was a great goal. Then it kind of just went into a lull for about 40 minutes of play. And I talked to Kev a couple of times on text, and I'm surprised neither one of us fell asleep during that stretch because the game got a little bit boring. And then all of a sudden, around the 78th minute, all hell broke loose. Mbappe scored in the 80th minute on a penalty kick. Then he scored again about a minute and a half later, and that was a great goal, another great goal. And then we went to overtime. We went to extra time, and in the 108th minute, Messi scores. And then in the 118th minute, Mbappe scores on a penalty kick to send it to PKs to decide the World Cup. We go to penalty kicks. Mbappe and Messi trade goals. And then Coman just... It was like he got enough on it, but he didn't get a lot on it. It was a good save. Dybala scores for Argentina to go up 2-1. And then we get a horrible shot from France. Tuneman misses, Parayi scores, and then we just see the last dose when Muani scores and Montiel scores. They win 4-2. It wound up being an unbelievable game. It had some moments where it slowed down, but for the most part, it was just a hell of a game. So, Kev.
Best soccer game I think I've ever watched. And the three of us, we're not big soccer fans. We get into the World Cup. We enjoy watching the World Cup. I've watched a couple of MLS games. I've been to Red Bull Arena a couple of times. Fun atmosphere. I mean, when you're actually there, soccer is fun. I disagree with Gino a little bit. I don't think the action, I don't think there was really a lull so much. I mean, I've seen soccer games where teams just pack it in. I thought Argentina was still, they play a little bit more defensive second half or try to, but I thought they were still trying to pick their spots to still put some pressure on France. France is the one that actually stepped up their game big time. Of course, as they're starting to get later, they're getting more and more desperate. I don't think Spain choked. I thought when they played the Netherlands, they choked. I think it was the Netherlands, right?
Yeah. When they gave the goal at 90 and 11.
Yeah. I thought that was more of a choke job. Spain looked panicked in that game. This game, I don't think they were
Argentina,
panicked.
Not Spain, buddy. Argentina.
I mean, Argentina. I'm sorry.
I know. I'm just
telling you. Thank you. I didn't think Argentina looked panicked. I thought France just upped their game. They drew the one penalty in the box for the kick. They picked Messi's pocket on the second goal, came back down, and Mbappe put a beautiful shot in net and scored. And the last half hour of that game was just edge of your seat. It was amazing to watch.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Darren? For me, I mean, it was the best game I ever saw as well. And like you said, Kev, you know, we watched the World Cup. I watched the Gold Cup. I do when the U.S. play in Mexico. I do get into it a little bit. Gino, I know, watches a little bit of European every now and again. I don't do it as much as you guys do, as he does anyway. Mbappe's hat trick, only the second in France's history in a World Cup game. I mean, pretty impressive because it's a long history of great players. I thought the now you guys know I missed the first half, so you guys gave me the update. Now, I thought the substitutions on France really hurt them. Di Maria, you knew, couldn't go to 90 because he's coming off injury, right?
Yeah.
So they got what they could out of him. He scored the goal. Argentina lost the guy in the shootout, but it was still pretty good. But losing Griezmann and losing Giroud in that shootout at the end really hurt them. And to be honest, they talked about Lloris struggling in shootouts, and it was clear. Argentina's goalie, and I'm blanking on his name, so I'm sorry, but he was in everybody's head. I mean, he's holding the ball, then throws it away. I mean, he was doing every kind of douche move you can do as my wife walks in the door and the dog explodes. But this is what life is here. But You know, but he did every douche move, but they could not solve him. You knew Mbappe was going to score, and you knew Messi was going to score. The difference was that everybody else in Argentina scored, and nobody else on France really did. But it was, you know, I called it in kicks. You know, I'm not going to act like I'm a genius. I just thought it was going to be – it was the two best teams playing each other. So I thought it was going to come down to that. When it was 2-0, Argentina was still controlling the game for the most part in the second half. Then all of a sudden, France took over. And then overtime, Argentina controls it for a while. And all of a sudden, at the end, France makes the push. And I'm not an Mbappe guy, but wow, is he good. Oh, Gino loves Messi. Tell us about how you love Messi, G.
He loves Messi like I love Brady.
It was a pleasure. It was a pleasure seeing the two best players in the world face off between Mbappe and Messi.
It was the best soccer game I've ever seen. I hope that we have this kind of excitement when it comes to the U.S., Canada, and Mexico in 26. And I hope to God I get to go to a game again. I don't care if it's Ecuador against Uruguay. I just want to see a game in a World Cup. G.
Okay, so my daughter, the non-sports person who tells me she does not sport, asked me a question. I didn't have an answer. Okay. So, and just the fact that she was paying attention enough gets me with this one. But she said the World Cup was in Qatar. Mm-hmm. So they were the host country. They got into the tournament. When the tournament is in North America,
all three get in.
Three automatic bids. Okay.
Even though I think it's only in one Mexican city, and I think it's in two Canadian cities. Yeah, G. Kev.
And now I can report back to my daughter on that because I was unsure of if that was true.
And don't forget, next one we expand to a 48-team field.
Correct.
Also.
Correct.
So the fact that you've got three automatic bids is irrelevant at that point. The three probably would have qualified anyway.
Well, yeah. I mean, Canada has kind of gotten themselves onto the national stage finally. Mexico's always there. And to be honest, the U.S. team was always pointing to 26 because of the youth of the squad.
Yeah.
Now, we'll see. You know, we'll see.
This year.
It was fun.
This year, the fact that they made the knockout stage, I think, was a bonus for them.
Absolutely.
And they weren't embarrassed by the Netherlands. They lost, but they played with them.
Yeah.
So that's all you could take.
Who's more beloved in Argentina now, Messi or Diego Maradona?
It's Messi.
And where's Messi rank on the GOAT list? I still have Pele 1.
Yeah, here's the thing. I outside of a little bit with the Cosmos, you know,
I mean,
the best player I ever saw was Giorgio Canella because he scored every night. I mean, Messi's the best player I've ever seen. But it's like Babe Ruth. Babe Ruth's the best baseball player ever. But you know. I don't know. I'd go Pele 1, Messi 2. That's the way I would go. Yep. Jake?
I think for right now, I don't think any of us can really use any other guy but Messi as the best player we've seen. But to go for the greatest player, I mean, between Pele and Maradona, we didn't really see them play at all. And I'm sure if we really talked about this with someone who's got a lot of World Cup knowledge, they're going to mention four or five other guys that the three of us don't even know. So for the moment, we're going to say it's Messi, but you know, I don't know if we can, how much knowledge we have going back 40 years to really define how much greater he is than the rest of the guys. So.
Nope. I'm with you.
Yep.
Anything else on World Cup, guys?
I think we covered it. It was really great. It was an epic tournament. I'm excited for it to come back here. It's going to be really cool.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, I thought it was phenomenal that it was in the winter months. I know that will change the next World Cup, but I thought it was kind of phenomenal that we were doing this in November and December, whereas sometimes it's in July and we are in the summertime here and we are doing 800 things and we don't get a chance to see some of these games. And I just thought it was really good.
I actually prefer it the other way. I like it better in the summer, but that's just me. Just because football and other things going on and sports that I do focus on. Baseball is the only thing really going on in the summer, so it's the only other sport really to focus on. And an occasional golf tournament. And those that haven't listened to us long, we will talk about golf more than you might care about. But there we are.
Another great segue by Darren talking about football. Let's talk about some week 15. It was a pretty awesome week in the NFL. It was so-so for the New York teams, but it was a pretty awesome week in the NFL. We had a lot of good games, a lot of games to talk about to highlight. Let's start with the first New York team. The Jets lost 2017 to Detroit.
I'll let Kev start.
Both teams go to 7-7. Jared Goff stunned the Jets late with a touchdown, 51 yards. Minute 49 remaining. They couldn't get anything else going. The Jet D was solid all game. I felt like they played a solid game until that last drive, and then all of a sudden it was like they couldn't get a stop to stop the drive. Zach Wilson was good. He was 18 for 35, 317 yards, threw for two touchdowns and interception. I know Kev's going to tell me it's a so-so performance. Judging from some of his games, that's probably what you're going to get out of him right now until he advances to the next level. Kev, let's talk about some Jets.
Zach was decent.
There you go.
missed too many open receivers. Bart Scott on Jets postgame live.
Yep.
The difference is Mike White makes the easy look easy. Zach Wilson makes the easy look hard. Wilson can't seem to throw the little dump offs, the short little patterns. He just can't seem to hit when he's in the pocket. Once a play breaks down and he gets outside the pocket, you feel like he can make the play. more than other quarterbacks, more than Mike White, obviously. But, you know, in the pocket, White's got the ability, and I hate to compare the two, but you watch him, and Mike White has the ability to say, the receiver's running this route. I expect him to be at point A. I'm going to throw the ball to point A. Zach Wilson waits until the receiver gets to that point, and if he's open, he'll throw it. But then he's off target. So that was my theme about Zach. The defense, yes, they were great until that last play. And it was really a terrific play design by the Lions. You're thinking fourth and inches. You're thinking either you're going to get Jared Goff up the middle. That the craze nowadays, you know, you get the quarterback sneak with everybody pushing from behind. You've got to defend against that. Then you've got Amon-Ra St. Brown in motion to the right. And then they fake the handoff to Swift to the right. Now everything's going to the right. And all of a sudden, Brock Wright, who has 14 catches on the year, he gets forgotten about. It didn't bother me that on fourth and inches, they completed the pass to Brock Wright for a first down. That would have been like, okay, great play. Make the damn tackle. You can't let him go 51 yards on the catch and run for a touchdown. That being said, you still got the ball at the 25, 1:49 left. Chance to get into field goal range. Three timeouts left. You cannot walk away kicking a field goal on the last play of the game with a timeout still in your pocket. From 1:49, here's where Zach really screwed up. What's the one rule you have as a quarterback in a two-minute drive?
Can't take a sack.
And what did Zach do on the first play?
Took a sack.
Okay. I don't have a problem not calling a timeout there. You go incompletion. You got the 3rd and 19 to Garrett Wilson for 22 yards.
Great pass.
Great pass. To me, take the timeout there. Get settled in. You just converted 3rd and 19. The next play, incompletion. So in 51 seconds of play, you've run four plays. You've gained 13 yards. 13 yards. And now you still got three timeouts. It's like, what are you wasting your time for? They had a 10-yard pass to Wilson. A lot of people say, oh, they should take a timeout here. That's why they don't mind taking a timeout, because I'm not sure if Wilson got the first down there. If you take a timeout, that first down may be overturned.
I agree with you on that.
But then after that, you go throw an incompletion, and he takes another sack. And then before you know it, you've got 19 seconds left, another incompletion. Then he throws that pass in the middle to that Moore catches, and he eventually gets down with 1 second left, and he sets up his own line for 58 yards. God, if you handle that 2-minute drill better between the lack of timeouts and if Zach gets rid of the ball instead of taking sacks, you know, you're talking about being in a 40-yard field goal range at least. 4 out of 5 losses after the break. They've come down to the end of the game every game, and they just can't make a play right now to win a game. And it's getting frustrating to watch. And we never, and as a Jet fan, we never thought we'd be in this situation right now. But boy, the one fortunate thing, if they win their last 3, they're in the playoffs. They still control their own destiny, assuming New England loses 1.
Which they will.
Yeah. Darren, the other Jet fan?
Okay, Wilson wasn't great, wasn't awful. Same thing. Here's the thing, but it seemed like he went out of his way not to just throw the ball away. It was like he was made a concerted effort not just to get rid of it and throw it away. And instead, he just, you know, took sacks a little bit. And you're like, all right. My big problem, you know, his interception was just like a really bad floated pass that I could have caught. That was that's how soft that was. He never throws the ball soft. That was it. Outside the pocket, he was completing passes. Inside the pocket, he looks confused. He does not go through his progressions fast enough. That's the difference between him and Mike White. I mean, the easy, hard thing, I agree with you on, but White can progress through so much quicker than Wilson can. It's ridiculous. Not that Mike White didn't get hit a ton, because he did. That's why he's not playing, and he's not playing tomorrow. But, wow, horrible clock management. Even though he had the 2 big throws in the last drive, he missed a few others of guys he's got to hit. Right? Defense was mostly good. First drive of the game, they were awful. Detroit walked right down the field, but they stopped them on fourth down. Stopped them. And then, you know, my problem with the Jet offense, though, I'm going to go back to the offense and I'll go back to defense in a second, is the play calling's ridiculous. They can't blow anybody off the line. Stop running every play on first down. This is a team that has to pass to set up the run. They're not a team that can run, especially without Vera Tucker, who's our best run-blocking old lineman, because the tackles are okay. Lincoln Tomlinson's been horrible. McGovern sucks. I'm sorry. I pick on the center every week. He's okay, but we need good centers. They run the ball into the ground the first down every single play, and Detroit stacked it up. And then on third down, they were sending the kitchen sink. And Detroit's not really good in coverage, but Wilson was having more guys coming at him than he had blockers. The play calling, they set him up to fail. I know that they wanted – Romo was praising the old coordinator last week, LaFleur, but he's not good. He has not set this team up to be strong as it should be. The one game I liked is when we were still running in the second half when we came back. Like that. Mix it. But this team right now, without Vera Tucker and without a real good run offensive line, needs to throw short passes to set up the run. It's almost like the way the Chiefs do it. I'm not trying to compare him to Mahomes. Don't get me wrong. But the short pass is kind of like an extension of the run. And then you kind of can go back to running because they can't sit there and put 8 guys in the box on first down every time. Am I the only one watching it? Where's LaFleur? He's sitting up there in the freaking booth. God damn it. Pay attention to the freaking game for once. My God, stop trying to be cute with too many motions. The kid sucks. Let him let him throw short passes. Let him get comfortable. Let him get confident. Drove me nuts. Defense again. We talked about that first drive. Then the punt return. Man, he had some pressure. He didn't get a good punt off. They scored the touchdown. Khalif Raymond went in. Yeah.
In fairness, you're at the 1-yard line. Yeah. That's one that your punter just try and get the punt away.
Well, yeah, because he's not back the full amount of distance. So he's got to get rid of it. I can't kill a man on that one, right?
Yep.
The noticeable thing was we didn't get pressure. Okay. The loss of Quinnen Williams pushing up that middle and allowing the ends to make plays was where we weren't great defensively. Now, with that being said, the defense for a total game gave up 13 points, 3 of which was when they had a fumble at the 15 and held them on 3 plays for a field goal. They had a 52-yard drive for another field goal and then the 51-yard pass where C.J. Mosley simply did not cover his man. We could say it was a great scheme, and it was, because the receivers all went deep and the defenders were nowhere to be found. But Mosley's responsibility is the tight end. We can blame it on the defense, but I can blame it on Mosley. Mosley missed his assignment. Kev?
Yeah, but again, I don't know if you feel the same way as me. The pass completion, I don't have a problem with. It's going to happen. You can't give up the 51 yards.
Well, here's the problem. Mosley was nowhere near him. Mosley was 20 yards behind him. He never covered him. Yeah. That's his responsibility. In the game, when they're playing that defense, his guy is that. That's what it is. I mean, you know, if everybody else is playing man and they're down the field, Detroit's wide receivers did a great job of blocking. They didn't target Sauce once, not once in the whole game. They didn't even go after him. Go after Reed, who's pretty damn good. You know, the loss of Joyner wasn't devastating. I thought Parks was fine. The problem, Michael Carter played pretty well in the slot. He did a nice job on St. Brown on a couple plays. The problem with this team is that, you know, I think the offensive coordinator's got to be a little bit more friendly to Zach, especially tomorrow night. And you brought up a good point, Kev, about the win out. Everything almost went perfectly for the Jets this weekend. Patriots lose. All right. The Dolphins lose. Okay. You know, the teams you're trying to catch, the Chargers came back late. That was the only one. I mean, but now what happened? Everybody's going down this week. The Ravens even lost a little bit. But we lose the tiebreaker to them anyway. The only team, you know, the Jags played themselves into it. The Raiders played themselves into it. And the Steelers played themselves into it. All of a sudden, we're talking last week about the two-game separation between the Titans and the Jags. And it doesn't look good. Jags beat Dallas. And all of a sudden, they're right there. The Titans lose their quarterback for the rest of the year. And, wow, it looks like the Jags can win the division. But the Jets win tomorrow against Jacksonville. They're really in no worse shape than they were last week. That's the interesting thing. With everything that went wrong, I really wish the offensive coordinator would do a little bit more to try to make it easier on Zach. Jake?
Across town, the Giants got a win Sunday night against Washington, 20-12. Giants move to 8-5-1. They probably take over. Well, they do take over the sixth spot for the playoffs right now. They're probably going to make the playoffs based on that. We talked about it last week. Couple of things from the Washington fan. I know Kayvon Thibodeau is good. He had a great game that night, but Collinsworth's got to give me a break. I mean, Collinsworth was making it sound like he was the second coming of Lawrence Taylor, the way he was moving around. I mean, he's got to just give me a break. The kids played three games. Let's just, you know, calm down a little bit.
He scored the touchdown, and that's why he wouldn't stop being all over him. Yeah, I know. You're right.
I know. I thought Washington was very sloppy in the game. I don't think that was a sharp Heinicke. He had a fumble later in the game.
That fumble late was devastating.
It was devastating. And then, listen, we talk about the officials sometimes. The pass interference on the last play, the no call on Samuel is horrible, but I don't know what else to tell. I don't know what else to say with some of these calls sometimes. You know, I know we had talked about it earlier in the year, Darren, but maybe we need to make sure that the coaches can challenge pass interference calls. Cause I mean, it was pretty clear. And I honestly don't know what denotes the fact that they don't call that penalty there. The guy's hanging all over him with both arms over his shoulders. I mean, but listen, that's not the reason we lost. We didn't play a good game. Heinicke fumbled. I don't think he had a good game at all. Even on the sack where Thibodeau ran it in, you know, it was a bad play. Heinicke's got to move around a little bit sometimes, and I think that he just didn't play a good game that game. So what do you guys say, Darren?
I just think Washington has a tendency to go away from that running game more than they should sometimes.
They do.
The two-headed monster at Gibson and Robinson is really good. I mean, listen, I like Heinicke too. He's kind of fun, does a lot of good things, but let's be honest. I mean, Robinson's a beast. They can't bring him down. You know, too many runs to Samuel. You know what? You want to do a sweep here and there? Fine. But in big spots, stop going to the littlest guy. You got a guy that runs people over. Go. I mean, the Giants are a nice team. They really are. They have a good defensive line, no linebackers that you heard of, and their secondary is average at best, right? But they play hard, they're well coached, and they're in the right position. Their O-line is okay, probably the best it's been in a long time. Might be a little bit better than okay. The running backs are back to being a star. The quarterback's a game manager, and he's average, and he's fine. The receiving core doesn't exist. But for some strange reason, if they're playing against another team of their level, they can beat anybody. The coaching puts them in position where they don't make the mistake to lose. I thought that the Giants made less mistakes than Washington. They won the game. Kev, any thoughts?
The two thoughts. Do you know that if you were to put a video together to say what's pass interference, that call's got to be on there.
Of course.
That was blatant. But then the offsides nullified the touchdown that they did score. Supposedly, McLaurin was asking the referee, am I good? Am I good? Just like wide receivers always do. How is he asking if he's good or not, and the referee throws a flag anyway?
It's just the stupidest thing in the world. I mean, the thing is, I don't know what pass interference is anymore because there's so many things where I think on the Jets, I think Sauce doesn't turn around and did he bump him and they don't call it? I'm like, I'll take it. You know, I mean, even on my team, I don't feel like I understand pass interference like I did 2 years ago. I think it's changed a little bit.
Yeah, Sauce gets away with a lot.
He's handsy. So is Reed. Is. They both are. They don't turn around ever.
But you're right. With that run game, you know, they rushed for 159 yards, Commanders.
Keep going.
Robinson only had 12 carries, 89 yards.
Keep going.
Gibson had 5 carries for 21. Why isn't he getting more?
Keep going.
Like you said, keep handing it to Curtis Samuel. 5 carries, 1 yard. The only guy they could stop.
Listen, this is probably the Giant game we've watched the most this year, all of us. I mean, because they're always competing with the Jets at the same time. So we don't see the whole game. So we got to watch the whole game. And you catch yourself, and to be honest, and it sounds mean, I'm rooting for Washington because I don't want to hear from Giant fans celebrating on a day where I'm already upset. It's not that I'm rooting against the Giants. I just don't want to hear it. It's not in a nasty way. But so I'm rooting for Washington to be in this game, maybe even win it because I don't want to hear it, right? So you watch it, and you just – every time Robinson gets the ball, it seems like he runs over people. And you're like, his conditioning's back already. What are we worried about?
Yeah.
This is the biggest game of the year. This game clinches the playoffs for you, basically. All you have to do is win one more game, and you're in if you're the Giants. If it would have been Washington the other way. I don't know. I just didn't like the play calling. Just don't like the play calling.
All right, let's go around the NFL. Philadelphia, they beat Chicago 25-20. They moved to 13-1. They are one game away from sealing everything up. Hurts, he's probably the MVP at this point, but wait, he's got a shoulder injury. We don't know if we're going to see him this week. It's questionable for the following week. By the way, along with the loss of Hurts goes maybe Gino's fantasy championship dreams in two leagues. We'll see, because I have Hurts in both leagues. The only other thing of note in that game was Justin Fields ran for 1,000 yards. He's the third quarterback to do it. The other two are Vic and Lamar Jackson. So he's definitely moving in the right direction. Philadelphia was so good in this game. Hurts was awesome. I know Darren hates Hurts.
I don't hate Hurts.
Yes, you do.
I don't think he can throw in a big spot. Sorry, you got me.
Okay.
And I don't think Philly was awesome in this game. Yep. They won by 5 points against a team that traded everybody away.
Okay. It was a draft game, and they've survived.
They did, and Hurts hurt his throwing shoulder, which is the bad part. It's not like it's his non-throwing shoulder. Listen, Jalen Hurts has been better than I thought he would be. I want to see if he's going to be better than Lamar Jackson in a big game. That's what I want to see. That's what I'm waiting to see.
Pittsburgh beat Carolina 24-16. They moved to 6-8. On the outside looking in, deep looking in. Probably not going to make it, but they now have.
Not as deep as you're saying, G. Not as deep as you're saying. They're 6-8. It's a loser leave town match against the Raiders this week. And Franco Harris passed away today. I'm sure we'll touch on that a little bit after. But I'm just saying, legendary guy, 72 years old. When you look about this matchup that's coming up this week, this is probably like the best rivalry that we didn't really get to ever really watch, so to speak. I mean, maybe there was Bears and Packers back in the day, but the 70s rivalry between the Raiders and the Steelers was pure hatred. Pure hatred. I remember the one where in 76 where the Raiders beat the Steelers and everybody was out for the Steelers. They had nobody. And they lost 24-7. And they go to Lambert after the game and missing his teeth in the middle. The typical old school middle linebacker says, get me a case of beer and let's play him again. I mean, it was that kind of hatred that you loved about this rivalry. And the loser's out this week and the winner stays around. Because there are, I mean, outside of the Chargers, everybody else ahead of them has tough games. So it's going to be interesting to see. I'm not saying that they're going to get in, G. I'm just saying that they're not dead yet. And they get Pickett back this week.
Good segue to the other team. Kev, any point on Pittsburgh?
I was just going to say with Franco Harris, didn't realize, well, obviously they've been hyping on the commercials this week. It's the 50th anniversary of the Immaculate Reception. Of course, Franco getting that ball and scoring the touchdown. And this weekend was supposed to be, I guess it was still will, but it's posthumous now. They were going to retire Franco Harris's number this weekend as well.
Yep.
And so, I'm surprised it wasn't done
that
before.
That play is amazing because you talk to the Steelers and it's the greatest play ever. You talk to the Raiders and they call him a lazy bastard that wasn't running out the play and happened to be lucky that the deflection went off him and it hit the Steeler first. It's because back then you couldn't have a deflection if it hit the offensive player first. It had to be a defensive player in order for you to catch it. So, and it's really close when you watch the replay 8 billion times. It's really hard to tell because the camera angles weren't the same. But, wow, the Raiders called him lazy. The Steelers called him, just hustling. It's great to watch that. Kev?
And when he retired, Franco is the third leading rusher in NFL history, only behind Jim Brown and Walter Payton.
That great run of Penn State running backs. Okay, maybe just a couple of them. But, you know, Franco was one of them, and he was great.
And Blair Thomas was right there.
Oh, yeah. It was him, Kurt Warner, and there we go. Anyway.
Speaking of the Raiders.
This was hysterical for me.
How do you like that?
I loved it.
Tie game. And you know, listen, they run it to Stevenson, and he gets up there, and he maybe flips it to Jacoby Myers to see if he can do something with it. Jacoby Myers makes the dumbest, literally, dumber than Leon Lett touching the blocked kick. This was the stupidest thing I've ever seen because you're going to overtime regardless. It's overtime. Instead, he throws it right to Chandler Jones, who basically throws Mac Jones to the ground and walks right in. I've never seen a game end that way. It was the most ridiculous. It wasn't even like a true stiff arm. He basically tapped him, and Mac Jones says, okay. I mean, it wasn't Mac's fault. The Raiders dominated the first half of this game, and all of a sudden they let the Patriots back in it. Patriots took the lead. The Raiders storm back and tie it up, and then that play ends the game. They throw it away, a lateral for a touchdown in a tie game. I don't think it's possible that I've ever seen anything close to that stupid. It was amazing, and as hatred of the Patriots, I couldn't be happier. Kev?
I think we have a replacement for the butt fumble.
I hope so.
In NFL lore.
Well, listen, the Jets have the fake spike, the butt fumble. Let's have the Patriots get something.
The fake spike, it was Aaron Glenn, right?
Yeah, he was playing. He was covering.
He had coverage. It was a good pass.
This was a whole lot of Aaron
Glenn for that one. He played.
This was a whole lot of stupid this week. That's all I got to tell you.
Oh, my God. I've never seen a team blow a game like that in my life.
Do you think Jacoby Myers, for one split second, thought that they were losing that game, that they were down a point and it wasn't tied?
I think he was trying to find a way to score a touchdown no matter what. I don't know if he knew what the score was, but I thought in his mind, they have a chance to score a touchdown, so I'm going to do it. So I'm going to throw the ball 15 yards back further to my quarterback. I mean, it makes no sense, but I know what he was trying to do. It was awesome to watch them embarrass themselves with that. That was great. I needed that. I needed that in the worst way. After the Jet loss, I needed that so badly.
Yep.
Let's stay with the AFC. The Chargers beat Tennessee 17-14. The Chargers moved to 8-6. Tennessee moves to 7-7.
Big news in that game is that Tannehill is now out. They basically say he's gone for the year. So now the South becomes a two-team race with Jacksonville and Tennessee. Tennessee with a one-game lead. They play each other last game of the season. So
And Jacksonville's already got the first win against them.
Yep. And they play the last game of the season again, too.
And the only reason they're in that position is because they beat Dallas 40-34. It was a good game, went into overtime. Dallas moves to 10-4, Jacksonville to 6-8. They're one game behind Tennessee now. And the winning play is a Dak Prescott interception returned. And that's it. So Jacksonville moves to 6-8. Do we think that they're gonna win this now?
They have a real good shot.
Yeah, I think so too.
I mean, here's the thing: Dak didn't play well, but at the same time, you know, he that last interception, it hit the receiver in the hands. He just didn't catch it. You know, but they were up 27-10. I picked Dallas as my best bet of the week. I felt pretty good at 27-10. They simply fell apart afterwards. Rest of the way, they fell apart.
Going back to the Chargers, they played a good game. Herbert threw the ball 42 times, connected 28 times. He's got Keenan Allen and Mike Williams back. They look like they're rolling a little bit now. 8-6 is what they are. At the moment, they are the sixth seed because of the tiebreaker scenario. So they're playing really well right now. Kev?
I think they're, like you said, they're finally healthy at wide receiver. Watching the Chargers over the last decade, do you trust them in the big spot? Or is Dicker the kicker going to blow one like every other San Diego kicker?
They play Monday night now against the Colts. Now, the Colts go to Foles this week. So it's not going to be Ryan. They're going to try to have someone that's not a statue like Flacco that we watch him. They're going to go with Foles. I'm not saying Foles is going to necessarily be the major difference, but I don't think he could do any worse. They also lost Taylor for the year, the Colts did. So on the first play the other day, the Chargers, you know, they didn't do much in that game.
Do you trust the coach, Darren?
No, I don't. He's going to make a bad call.
And I said San Diego and meant LA.
Same thing. They wish they were in San Diego, the players, they'd have a home field.
Yeah.
Cincinnati, they moved to 10-4. They beat Tampa Bay 34-23. Tampa Bay's up 17-3 at the half. Cincinnati comes back. They score 31 points in the second half. Burrow, 4 touchdowns. Cincinnati, by the way, goes 4-0 against the NFC South. If you're going to point to a reason why they're playing well, there's 4 wins right there. Cincinnati now is the 3 seed at the moment with 10 wins. Anything on that game, guys?
Go ahead,
not Kev. One, not two, not three, but 4 straight possessions with a turnover by Tom Brady's team. Tom Brady now has more losses this season than in any other year in his career. For Cincy, though, 10-4 have the game lead over Baltimore, but they're at New England this week in the cold. Then they've got home for Buffalo, home for Baltimore. They still have a tough schedule to finish up here.
Yeah.
So is Baltimore still alive?
And the NFC South, when we get to it, is probably the strangest division of all time.
Yep. We're not there yet, but we're going to get there in a couple minutes.
I'm just saying.
Other AFC game, Buffalo beat Miami 32-29.
Great
Buffalo
game.
Buffalo moves to 11-3, Dolphins to 8-6. Buffalo is the one seed at the moment with 11 wins. Bass hit a field goal with 2 seconds left in the snow flurries. It was a hell of a game watching that snow come down in Buffalo. Favorite moment watching the game for me was the announcers got the whole crowd singing "Let It Snow, Let It Snow, Let It Snow." Just unbelievable. Allen had 4 touchdowns, 2 or 3 touchdowns. It was pretty, I thought it was pretty crazy that they were able to throw the ball that well.
There was no wind in the stadium. Nope. 3 mile an hour winds. That's how throwing the ball becomes hard when it's windy.
It didn't start snowing until the fourth quarter.
Yep.
So it wasn't until late. My favorite moment was watching all the linemen try to clear that snow off.
Absolutely.
That was great.
I was just going there, Kev. Go ahead.
And as a Jet fan, happy that Buffalo won that game.
Yeah, I mean, listen, this was the best I saw Josh Allen look since the injury, to be honest, against the Jets. This is the best game he played. I think he had to play well, and he really did, actually. I thought he was spot on. Listen, Miami hung in there a little bit better than I expected him to in that weather.
Yeah. And in two weeks, that Buffalo-Cincy game is going to affect about 4 different teams. Buffalo and Cincy's 2 playing. It's going to affect Baltimore, depending on what they're doing. And it's also going to affect Kansas City for home field.
Yep.
Buffalo in that game had 446 yards. Miami, 405 yards. They combined for 851 yards. And the conditions were really – listen, there was no wind, but the snow was a disaster, especially towards the end of that game. We're going to see if this – as we go through this year, what happens with Buffalo – Kansas City is the other one with 11 wins. They beat Houston 30-24. McKinnon, a 26-yard touchdown run in overtime for the win. Darren?
Well, here's the thing. Kansas City outgained them by over 200 yards. They actually dominated the game. Mahomes was nearly perfect. He only had 5 incompletions the whole day. Problem was they committed 10 penalties and they had a couple turnovers. And they kept Houston in the game. The Chiefs defense doesn't put any fear in you. You don't feel like they're going to stop anybody in a big spot. It's just going to be, are you going to be able to stop Mahomes? Like I said last week, everybody's down on them because they lost the game to Cincinnati. They've lost 3 games by a total of 8 points. All late, the Buffalo game at home, the Cincinnati game on the road where they missed a field goal to tie, and the Colt game where they made a turnover late and they gave up that point, that touchdown real late. They're still a team to be reckoned with, just don't have much faith in their defense.
I think the one thing they have to clean up, I think they are -7 this year in turnover differential.
Absolutely.
Unheard of to be 11-3 and be -7. They have to clean that up before the playoffs.
I mean, Pacheco let one right on the ground at like the 18-yard line. They had 2 fumbles in the on the day. Just not a crisp performance, but they clinched the division for the 7th straight year.
Yep.
They don't lose much.
Only 2 playoff spots clinched in the AFC. Buffalo's clinched a playoff spot. Kansas City's clinched a division.
Yep.
Cleveland beat Baltimore 13-3. I'm only mentioning it because Baltimore is at 9-5, but no Lamar Jackson. They are just a completely different team.
Yeah. He does a lot.
Huntley's shown that, you know, as a backup quarterback, there are games where he's going to come in and do okay and let them win, and there are going to be games where he shows that, yeah, he is a backup quarterback.
First Cleveland-Baltimore rivalry is so intense, particularly for the city of Cleveland, that becomes, you know, it doesn't matter what the records are a little bit in that one. The city of Cleveland takes the Ravens so seriously because of what Art Modell did that it's nasty. It's just nasty.
First win for Deshaun Watson since he's back. It really wasn't a great performance, but they get the win 13-3. Let's move to some NFC games. San Francisco beats Seattle 21-13. It's a 7th straight win. They move to 10-4. Purdy's good. McCaffrey's better. Kittle, 2 touchdowns. They're rolling right now. San Francisco at the moment is the 3 seed. We'll see if they're able to move ahead of Minnesota. I know Darren has no faith in Minnesota, but we'll talk about them in a second. Anything on San Francisco, guys?
Just Seattle's in a free fall.
They are in a free fall.
2 straight losses at home like that. They closed the gap, but they were never really in that game.
And Brock Purdy, good enough on a short week on the road.
Yeah, impressive.
Yeah. Okay, the Saturday crazy game. Minnesota beats Indianapolis 39-36. Minnesota moves to 11-3. It's the biggest comeback in NFL history. They were down 33. They trailed 36-7 late in the third quarter. It's the second team since 1930 to erase a 30-point deficit. It's been 1,551 games since that happened. Cousins had 460 yards and 4 touchdowns. Osborne had 157 yards and a touchdown. Jefferson, they won the game on a 40-yard field goal with 3 seconds left in overtime. Darren, talk to me about Minnesota.
Well, listen, the Colts defense really isn't bad statistically. So to come back on the way they did, very impressive. Minnesota's not great at anything. They have 1 superstar player. In Jefferson, they have a really good running back in Cook, who's getting a little older, and Madison looks really good. Cousins is okay when given time. He's above average, but he's not superstar. The O-line is decent, especially with Darisaw playing. He makes them a lot better than when we saw them play. But you know what? They find a way to squeak out these 3-point wins every week. 3, 4, 5, 1-score games. They just keep winning them. You play a little dangerously when you play this way. Their defense is okay, but not great. I mean, it's like they're a decent team. They're a good. They're 11-3, so obviously they're better than decent, but they don't scare you. I mean, I don't think any Giant fan is like, oh my God, we can't win in Minnesota. I mean, I know as a Jet fan, we thought we should have won the game in Minnesota, but we feel that way about every game, so you can't go by the Jet fan. But, you know, listen, great comeback. You got to give them full props. They're a really good team. I don't think they're as good as San Francisco, and I don't think they're as good as Philadelphia. And that Philly already proved that the first time they played. Kev?
What got me in the second half, Minnesota punted twice.
Mm-hmm.
They threw an interception. They turned the ball over on downs and still scored 5 touchdowns. We watch games where teams get 11 or 12 possessions for the game, and Minnesota had 9 possessions in the second half. Terrible job by Colts offense to not get a drive or two going to chew up 4 or 5 minutes.
And this is why we'll see Matt Ryan this week.
That's right. Matt Ryan now has the biggest regular season collapse and the biggest Super Bowl collapse on his record. That looked nice on his Hall of Fame plaque.
Well done, Matty Ice.
Monday night, we saw the Packers with a 24-12 win. Green Bay moves to 6-8. They keep their playoff hopes alive, although there are a couple of teams in front of them that they're going to have to deal with. But
they do play Detroit, though. They do play one of them.
Here comes the NFC South talk. New Orleans beats Atlanta 21-18. The Buccaneers are 6-8. The Panthers, Saints, and Falcons are all 5-9 with 3 games to play. One of them's going to get in by default. Darren?
It's funny. A couple weeks ago, I said I thought the Saints were the best team, right? And then they lost, and they blew a 13-point lead on Monday night. And I'm like, And now suddenly they're back in it again. Then the Panthers looked like they were turning the corner. They went into Seattle and won. Then they come home and lay an egg against Pittsburgh. Atlanta, Arthur Smith with a team with no talent, playing Riddler now a quarterback, is keeps them in every game. They cover most games, but they're just not very good. You know, they blew the game. London fumbled. I mean, you know, I mean, this division, it's bad. It's bad football. And the winner of this division at best probably comes out of here 7-10. You know, I mean, can Tampa go 8-9? Maybe. I don't see them going 8-9. I think the winner's going to be 7-10. If somebody wins 2 out of 3 here in the back end, I think they'll find a way to get in. Kev?
Tampa has Arizona this weekend with McSorley getting his first start. That's the first win. And then you've got home for Carolina and Atlanta.
I get it. I just don't know if they're going to be able to beat Carolina.
Somebody's got to win. New Orleans is in the worst shape, I think. They've lost twice to Tampa.
And they have a bad schedule.
Yeah. Carolina's beaten Tampa already. They still play next week. Mm-hmm. Not this week, coming up, but next week. Atlanta lost the first time to Tampa, but they played Tampa the last weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So anything, it's still up for grabs. Happen.
I mean, but I'd be stunned if, you know, I mean, maybe they go 8-9 Tampa and get it. I don't know if they're going to win 3. They'll win this one. I don't know if they can. It's going to be weird.
I think 7-10. I think a 7-10 3-way tie would be fun.
It would be. It's just, you know, it's mediocre football. But now what we look at it this week, there is literally one game on the schedule this week that has no playoff implication. That's the Broncos-Rams, which is highlighted because the Rams are the defending champion and the Broncos got Russell Wilson. So they highlighted this game. Every other game has some form of a playoff implication this week. Every other game. It's the only bad game on the lot is the Broncos and the Rams. That's where we sit right now. You know, the Lions are back in right now, half game behind the Commanders. The Seahawks are there as well. Lions have a little bit of an easier schedule, I think, than the Seahawks do. They could pass them. Well, the Commanders have a couple of tough games still left. You know, there's a lot going on here. That race for the 7th spot is going to be very interesting.
I give the edge right now to Detroit, actually.
I do, too. They have the easiest schedule. Three.
Washington's got at San Fran, Cleveland, and Dallas. So that's two
really tough games.
Likely losses. Seattle's got at Kansas City, home for the Jets, home for the Rams.
It's so one tough one and one mediocre one.
And then Detroit's got at Carolina, home for Chicago, at Green Bay.
They're all winnable for Detroit.
Yeah.
Now, going to Green Bay to get in is not an easy thing. And the Carolina game this week won't be easy. But you know what? It's
They've given themselves a chance.
I mean, listen, you watch Detroit, their high-powered offense again put up 13 against the Jets, and seven of it was on a 51-yard play on a fourth and inches where the Jets missed an assignment. Yeah. I mean, so, you know, it's not like their high-flying offense looked great this week, but I don't know if Carolina has the weapons that the Jets do defensively. But, man, we'll see what happens with it. But it's a really wild year in the NFL.
3 weeks left, guys. 3 weeks left.
That's it.
Jets getting in?
No.
Wow, that was fast.
No.
I think you're right, unfortunately.
Well, here's the thing. We've been talking about it, making fun of ourselves all year about how we said they were an 8 or 9 win team at best. That's what we are.
That's where they are. Yep.
An 8 or 9 win team at best. We're not going to go 10-7. I would love beyond anything to win the last three. And it's not impossible. We're favored against Jacksonville tomorrow. I don't know how, but we are. Against Seattle, that's a winnable game too. And Monday, and that game against Miami, we beat them once already, and we match up well against them. So it's not like we can't win all three of these games, but Zach starts again tomorrow. And the difference between Lawrence and Zach Wilson is night and day. And I'm not saying it's all Zach's fault, but the difference between Peterson running the show for Lawrence and what we have running the show on offense with LaFleur for Zach is night and day. Gino, are the Commanders getting in?
Unfortunately, I'm going to say no also. I think last week's game, I think you were right on it when we talked about it last week, Darren. I thought the winner is going to get in and the loser isn't. And I'm on that track right now. Unfortunately, I think it was a decent year, but I don't think we're getting in either. I don't think we're going to get two. I think to get in, we're going to have to win two of the next three. I don't think we're doing it. So,
I got you. It's going to be close. It's going to be a good race down the stretch. Okay.
Yep. All right. Let's talk about some NCAA football, Darren.
All right. Just a couple of things. There's so many bowls going on. It's amazing. And some of them are not of major teams. What we're going to do is cover a couple of games this week, but there's like 12 bowl games between now and the next time we're going to meet. So we're just going to highlight three or four of them that are going to be decent. The thing about it, and Kev brought it up last week so eloquently and correctly, is that there's so many guys opting out, so many guys in the transfer portal that you really don't know. And you also don't know how these kids are going to react off a month off of football. So you don't know who's coming in motivated, who got healthy, that wasn't healthy at the end of the year. You don't know any of these things. So it's all a crapshoot.
And even coaches not being there, Darren.
No, absolutely. Yeah. So we picked four just to highlight real quick, and then we're going to keep giving our picks the day of with like a stupid picture of a quarterback or the captain or whatever. Yeah, Kev.
Before we go to the upcoming games, anything for the previous week? Games that you want to just mention quickly?
I mean, well, since you brought it up, bring up one that you have.
I'll follow up with you. Just to make sure we mention it, Southern Miss 38, Rice 24, but the story of that game, Frank Gore Jr.,
big son game of the
former NFL running back, 21 carries and a bowl record 329 yards rushing.
The fact they only had 21 carries is a scary part.
Another interesting game, BYU beat SMU 24-23. SMU trailed 24-10 in the fourth quarter, scored the touchdown with 8 seconds left, 1 for 2, missed it. Another example of a coach going for the win right there. He's got the momentum. Play. They came back, go for the win. Don't go to overtime. Let the kids decide there. And just one of these funny little things, Eastern Michigan 41, San Jose State 27. Eastern Michigan now has 2 bowl wins in their school's history. Both of them against San Jose State.
Yeah. That was real cool. The other thing, I mean, we talked about the Gore game. You know, Rice, I picked Rice in that game. That game was 24-24 going into the fourth. I felt pretty good about myself. And then, you know, Rice, touchdown for Southern Miss, a turnover by Rice, another touchdown for Southern Miss on a long run, and it was pretty much over. Again, I haven't bet on any of these games, but I am following them closely, trying to come up with anything.
Thankfully, you haven't. What? Thankfully, you haven't bet.
I haven't been good. I haven't been real good at all. You know, it's hard to. I mean, listen, like tonight, we all picked South Alabama. They're down 31-3 at the break. That better defensive team's given up 31 points already.
If we take this game as a loss, all three of us, Kev is 6-6 through the first 12, and you
I have about three.
You and I are 3-9. So.
Yeah, exactly. I'm dying.
1-4 when we pick the same. 1-4 when we pick the same team. So
yeah, I mean, well, yesterday we lost on a wide receiver pass. Yeah. That we didn't lose the game. We lost the cover. But I mean, you know, just one of those things where you feel like you have it and you just don't. But yeah, you know, just a lot of the good bowl games are going to be coming up now. Just going to highlight four real quick. The Gasparilla Bowl, because that's important down in Tampa. Wake plays Missouri. Only reason I picked this one, because it's actually this week before the weekend goes. Sam Hartman, who's like Wake's all-time passing, whatever, everything. This is his last game at Wake. He's headed into the portal, but he agreed to play. They lose a few offensive players to the opt-out, but not that bad. Missouri gets hurt a lot more. Okay, they lose their top wide receiver and their best three of their better defensive players in this game. Missouri's the better defensive squad, but missing those key players, I think Wake can win the game with the -2. That's just my take on it. I don't know how you guys feel about that.
Yeah, it's interesting because you've got two teams in the opposite directions. Missouri's 1-4-6 to get to 6-6 to make the bowl game. Wake started off the season well. They've lost 4 of the last 5.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, they have the edge at quarterback with Hartman's deciding to stick around for the last game. So probably would go tend towards Wake as well.
Gee, any thoughts?
Yeah, same to you. Yeah.
Yep. Oh, great.
So now bet on Missouri, everybody.
Missouri's a lock.
Liberty Bowl, always one of the more fun bowl games of the year out in Memphis. Kansas plays Arkansas. And for you people that love stupid little trivia things, Kansas is the only state that's full name is inside another state. Kansas and Arkansas. Anyway, Arkansas keeps their quarterback. They thought he was going to transfer Jefferson, but he did not. But they do lose their first team ACC SEC center, and they're all SEC linebacker in Sanders. They also lost a couple of wide receivers that in the blowout against Missouri. What was that? Yep. And Pittman fired the coach. He fired the strength coach because he was so embarrassed by how blown out they got by Missouri.
And Arkansas is missing their defensive coordinator. He took another head coaching job.
Next line, I don't have to go there. For Kansas, they come in with the happy-to-be-here attitude. The only guy that's hurt is Hishaw, who's their running back, who's a good running back, but he's been out for a few weeks. No one else is transferring right now, and Leipold got a huge extension. You know, the spread is Arkansas by 3. I think Kansas wins the game outright. I think Arkansas has a few more question marks. I think Kansas is really excited to be in a bowl game. Just my take. I don't know what you guys think.
Another example, Kansas started off 5-0. They've lost 6 of 7.
Yep.
So this might be the way to salvage their season. Arkansas is 3-3 in their last 6. The 3 losses were by a combined 7 points. Like I said, I think they might have too many losses from the transfer portal. I keep saying protocol, transfer portal. I got it right this time.
Let's go with the protocol.
Yep. I mean, it's funny. When you look at the stats, the offensive and defensive numbers are pretty much dead even between the two schools. So, again, it's just going to be, like you said, Kansas may have just enough players remaining to pull that one out.
I think it's a money line bet for me. G, any thoughts?
I take Arkansas -3.
There you go. Then we go to the Guaranteed Rate Bowl because that's in Phoenix. So let's go with it on 12/27. Oklahoma State plays Wisconsin. Both teams' quarterbacks are in the transfer portal. Okay. Combined 29 players are in the portal. So rather than go through all of them, or injured, I'm sorry, either portal or injured. Wisconsin's favored by 3 at this point. Jim Leonard's last game, he played at Wisconsin. He's been the interim coach. You know, they made the move after Chris got fired midseason. Oklahoma State really fell apart after a great start. Wisconsin was kind of like, most of the year. They've been back and forth, but they are the favorite in this game. I think the Badgers win one for Jim Leonard, just to take. I'll take the Badgers -3. Kev?
I think in the battle of backup quarterbacks, Wisconsin's backups have 11 passes attempted this year. Oklahoma State starting the freshman Garrett Rangel.
Yep.
He started 2 games this year, so at least he's got a little bit more experience. That might be the edge.
He wasn't very good in those games. That's the only problem.
Yeah, but that might be enough of the edge for me.
Go with Okie?
Probably go Okie. My official pick, the official picks will be on Facebook.
I understand. G?
I like Oklahoma State plus the points.
Okie dokie. And the final one I want to touch on, because it's always the best bowl game scoring-wise every year, just about, the Holiday Bowl. Well, Oregon and Bo Nix staying around for at Oregon and playing in this game. And May for North Carolina, who was offered $5 million by multiple teams to transfer, but is staying at North Carolina. Games in San Diego. You know, the big loss for Oregon is their cornerback Gonzalez. He was like an all Pac-12 performer. He's opted out. He's transfer portal. I'm sorry. Carolina loses Downs, who's first team all ACC. He just opted out of the game because he's trying to prepare. He's a second team All American. Three defensive backs from Carolina also in the transfer portal, and they're a poor defensive team to start. Oregon's favored by 14. And I think they roll. I'll take Oregon in the over, laying 14. I think they're going to put up 50.
Wow. The over-under here is 73.
Yeah, I think the game's in the 80s.
The high-scoring Holiday Bowl. North Carolina started 9-1. They've lost the last three. Georgia Tech, NC State. Yeah, and then they lost to Clemson. Oregon lost opening week, as we know. They've won 8 in a row, then lost 2 of the last 3. But their losses were Washington and Oregon State. They did beat Utah, so they are playing better. I just don't know if 14.5 is too big a number.
G, any thoughts?
So what is the pick, Kev?
Probably go North Carolina, just because it's a big number.
I like Oregon minus the 14. I actually think they roll, and that was before Darren actually said it 3 minutes ago. But yeah,
I think Bo Nix playing is a big deal, and I think North Carolina's going the wrong way. But we'll see. Yep. Mac Brown's a good coach. The one thing is, next week we're going to talk about the semifinals. We're going to talk about the two major games that are going to be happening on the 31st. The NCAA college football semifinals. You're looking at me funny, Kev.
The game's done on the 31st next week.
Well, the championship game's on the 9th, but the semifinal is on the 31st. The championship game's on the 9th.
The big game's on the 29th, I think.
Oh, yeah, South Carolina, because dozens of people are going to watch that outside of Columbia.
The Gator Bowl.
And they're all watching it for the other squad.
Yes, they are.
So we'll cover that, plus a couple of other games, and, of course, the South Carolina-Notre Dame game, which everybody's going to be riveted on. But we'll get more into college football next week, a little bit heavier. Just want to give you a little taste of these games and just really to kind of show you what good teams are dealing with, how many players are out, what things look like. And, you know, that's what you get with college football. You get the premier teams, and then you get, you know, a bunch of teams that finish 7-5 and 6-6 and maybe 8-4. Next week we'll see the 9-3s, and then we'll start seeing the finals, the semifinal and the final. And that's it for college football.
All right, let's move to NFL picks.
Okay. Deb,
are you ready for week 16 picks?
Let me find them.
With your 19 wins out of 45 tries, you are going to lead the way tonight.
No.
I had an awful week last week. Everybody fell apart on me.
Yeah, people are ready for these picks. Game number one, I'm going to start with a cold weather game. Cleveland at home, -2.5 versus the Saints. Southern team in the dome going up to a game that's being played in single digits. I'll take Cleveland. They're laying less than a field goal, so I'll take Cleveland to cover that game. Game number two, because it is probably the biggest game of the weekend, Philadelphia at Dallas. With Hurts questionable at best, the spread is 4.5 that Dallas is favored by. I have faith in Gardner Minshew to come in and do a good job, and I think he can keep this game close. Dallas might still be able to win by a field goal, but I wouldn't be surprised if Philly does pull off the win with Gardner Minshew. So I'll take Philly plus a 4.5. And the third game, originally I was going to pick Tennessee until Tannehill's injury. I just don't know, Malik Willis. So I changed my pick. I'm going with the Franco Harris, immaculate reception festivities. And again, another cold weather game. Las Vegas flying in from Vegas to single digit temperature. Pittsburgh is favored by 2.5. I'll take the Steelers minus 2.5. Those are my three picks.
All right, I'm going right to Buffalo. I like the Bills at the Bears this week, minus the 8.5. I think Buffalo's starting to roll. I'm taking Buffalo minus the 8.5 as my first game. My second game is another team on a roll, and that's Cincinnati. I actually love Cincinnati minus 3.5 in New England. I think this could be a 14-point game. I do not have faith in New England right now, and Cincinnati is rocking and rolling the way they're playing. Cincinnati minus the 3.5 is my second pick. And my third pick, I'm going to Minnesota. I am taking the Vikings minus the 3.5. And I think it's more of a problem for me from last week with the Giants beating my Commanders. I think Minnesota gets their 12th win, and I think the Giants don't feel so good after this loss. I'm taking Minnesota minus the 3.5. Aaron, week 16 picks.
Okay, well, I'm going to agree with each of you once. I'm going to start off. I like Buffalo as well. I just think that their defense is a little bit better than Philly in an all-around matchup and trying to control fields, and I think that they'll be able to win the game by 10 points. So I think the 8.5 is something that's very doable. Kev, I agree with you on the Steelers. I thought this way before Franco died, but now I think they'll do it for Franco. Laying a couple of 2.5 points over to the Raiders or whatever it is. I like the Steelers kind of covering that game. And I'm going to go on a limb on this other one. I'm taking the Panthers plus 3 at home against the Lions. I don't know if Detroit can win 3 in a row on the road. I just don't. I don't know. Maybe they can. That division is so unpredictable that I just don't know what to expect. So I'm going to take a home dog there. I'm going to take the Panthers getting the points against Detroit.
I'm going to give you a 4-team money line parlay because I've been so good with these so far. Buffalo, Cincinnati, Miami, and the Chargers money lines. Plus 330 total for the 14 parlay. That's money line pick for week 16. Aaron, do you want to hit anything else?
Well, I got a little bit of college hoop, and then I'll get out of the way, but it won't be long. Just the top five right now. Purdue is still undefeated, best team in the land. UConn is right there as 2. Houston moves back up. I mean, again, they're playing really well. 3, Arizona beat Tennessee, so I put them in. And Virginia, even though they lost to Miami last night, I still keep them in my top 5. As you get into the tournaments, the type of stuff a conference play anyway to start, the backcourt that that Miami puts together with Pack and Wong is really, really good. And that usually bodes well as you get into tournaments and stuff like that, having great guards. And Miami's a team to watch. Team of the week to me was UCLA. They went into Maryland, but blowing them out by 40, won the game by 29. And then they went into a neutral court game and beat Kentucky at the Garden, which wasn't much of a neutral court game because it was all Kentucky in that crowd. And they controlled that game as well. So after they were the dud of the week a few weeks back with losses to Illinois and Baylor, I really liked the way they came back and beat Maryland and Kentucky, both road and neutral. One team that still sits out there is undefeated is New Mexico. Thought that they were really, really good. Still playing well, so interesting to see. Arizona, Tennessee was a real great game, actually. It was like a tournament-type game. The big thing is the game's in Arizona. Foul discrepancy, 27 foul attempts at the line for Arizona, 10 for Tennessee. Game was a 5-point game. Just feel like in a neutral court, it probably wouldn't have been the same. Both teams go inside a lot. Houston's big win at Virginia, I thought was great, 69-61 on the road after they lost at home to Alabama. They went into Virginia and won. Purdue, Edey is a monster. I don't know if you guys have seen this guy, 7'4". He's averaging a double-double. You can't teach height, and he's 7'4". A nice win over Davidson at home, amongst other things. UConn's blowing out everybody they play. Gonzaga beat Alabama in that neutral court win, so I thought that was really nice. And USC behind Boogie Ellis is 28. Went in and beat Auburn. Just one fact, every team now in Division I has a win. The last team to do it was tonight. Do you guys know what team that was?
Was it Cal?
No.
It was the Cal Golden Bears. 0-12 coming into tonight. Got past the University of Texas Arlington. Now, they played some decent teams, but nobody that would knock you out. And, wow, it was just one of those type of things that you don't expect. A Pac-12 team, a Big Five conference team to be the last team to get a win. Usually it's a SWAC team or a MEAC or some kind of crap like that. This was stunning to me. Louisville still struggling like crazy. Lost at home to Lipscomb last night. Georgetown not good. I'm sorry to say South Carolina not playing well either yet. Other upsets of the week, just so you guys know, Wake beat Duke last night. Huge win for Wake. As a Wake fan, I have to talk about it. Utah Valley went into Oregon and won. Yeah, you know, you don't expect that. Mississippi State was undefeated until last night when they lost to Drake. And then San Francisco won at UNLV and knocked them out from being undefeated. And right now San Francisco's beating Arizona State at the half by about 20. And Arizona State's ranked. So both Hurley brothers are ranked for right now. We'll see what happens. Big games of the week, there aren't any, really. Villanova won tonight against St. John's, which was pretty good. TCU went into Utah and won, so that was a nice win. And Auburn's blowing out Washington on the road. Beside that, there's a couple of tournaments, so you don't know who's going to meet up in the second round. Really hard to say. But it's a light week for college basketball, but conference play starts up. It's going to get real exciting. Kev?
You missed one from today. The game was moved up by 4 hours, so it was an afternoon game. Eastern Illinois as a 31.5-point underdog goes into Iowa and knocks them off. 82-83.
The Panthers.
Maybe the only time you mentioned Eastern Illinois this year.
The Panthers. There were 3-9 coming in. It was not a good Eastern Illinois team. Charleston, Illinois, not celebrating this team, but they did go into Carver Hawkeye and win by 9 today. You're right, because it happened a little bit earlier today. But yeah, it's what you guys are going to find as you get more into it is that there aren't a lot of really excellent teams this year. There's a couple of really good ones, and then there's a lot of mediocrity. That bubble, as we get into March, is going to see a lot of teams that are 17-15, 16-14, you know, 18-13. We're going to have teams with more losses getting in than usual. Kev, you were going to say something, and so was Gino.
I was just going to say the one stat. Underdogs of 30 or more points were 0-558 in the last 30 years.
Wow.
Just to put that in perspective.
I mean, Panthers to win, who are not even going to be a player in their own conference in Iowa by 9. Yeah. It's a nice win.
Yeah.
G, you can say something?
Not any NHL, NBA comments, guys, before we sign out.
Let's do a quick top 5, and I had one stat for the NHL, if that's all right.
Yep.
All right. I'll throw my top 5 in first. The Devils have fallen out for me. They won tonight, actually, so they got it back. But Boston is now my 1, Toronto my 2, Winnipeg 3, Carolina, winner of 6 in a row, is 4, and I put Vegas as 5, just ahead of Minnesota, because Minnesota's also won 5 in a row. Kev?
Pretty similar. Boston 1. I have Carolina 2, Toronto 3, because Carolina is 6 in a row, 9-0-1 in the last 10. I've got Dallas 4, Winnipeg 5, and I had the Devils bumped out because they lost 6 in a row until tonight. Yeah.
Okay, Jake. I didn't bump them out, but I moved the Devils down to 5. I got Boston 1, Toronto 2, Tampa Bay 3. I got Pittsburgh, who's hot right now, at 4, and the Devils staying around at 5. You know, Rangers playing having a little streak here, so they're playing well right now also. Islanders sticking around too, yeah.
Greatest stat I saw of any sport this week, and the reason why I'm bringing it up, because we brought up the GOAT thing before. If you took away every goal Wayne Gretzky ever scored, he would still be the all-time leader in points in the NHL.
That's awesome.
Simple thing is that, you know, there's always debate. I mean, baseball, you know, because of generations, Babe Ruth's probably the greatest player that ever played, but, you know, everybody has different thoughts about that type of stuff. But you probably, a consensus would say that. You know, the NBA, there's some people that might say LeBron. Some people say Bill Russell because of the championships. I think Jordan's the best that ever played, because he was such a amazing type player. Talked about Messi and Pele a little bit earlier. You talk about football, you hear about Jim Brown, you hear about Lawrence Taylor and all these other guys, but there's a little bit of debate. You know, you can go which way or the other. I don't think there's ever going to be a debate in hockey. We actually saw the greatest player ever to play. It's really that amazing to sit there with that stat. You take away every goal he ever scored, and he has more points than any player ever. And the only reason why I like that stat is because we were talking about Ovechkin, and he's great. And that's how far ahead Gretzky is. It's just amazing. The other thing really quick, the Masters is going to allow the LIV players to play if they qualify. because there was a little talk about the PGA and the LIV not merging, so not allowing their players to play, but the Masters is letting them play. So we're going to have all the superstars playing at Augusta, which is nice. And then if you guys want to do a quick NBA before we sign off, Kev, sure. Why don't you lead the way on that, bud?
All right, a little change in the top for me. I've had Milwaukee, Boston 1-2 in some order. Milwaukee stayed consistent, so I've got them at 1. Celtics have lost. They lost 2 in a row at home to Orlando.
Yep.
NBA this year has done something where they have a couple of times where a team comes in for 2 games in a row at the same arena. They're only 5-5 in their last 10. 3, I've got Cleveland. They've won 4 in a row. 4, I've got the Nets up to 4. They've won 6 in a row, and tonight they crushed Golden State to make it 7 in a row.
I don't know if you know the stat, Kev. They had 91 at the half.
Yeah, 91-51.
91 at the half.
Golden State shot 50% in the first half and were down by 40.
91 without Kyrie in the first half. I'm just saying.
And I've got Denver, winners of they're 19-11. I've got them at 5. I have Memphis drop out. They've lost 2. New Orleans, I have drop out. They've lost 4 in a row. But I did also want to mention locally the Knicks also, 8 in a row. They've been playing well lately.
They lost tonight.
Oh, they did lose. So that's right.
Toronto did take them, but yeah. G?
Mine's very similar to Kev. The only thing is that I have Boston still hanging around at the 5, so.
I have. You have Boston at the 2, right?
Boston at the 2? Boston at the 5?
Yeah, I dropped Boston down to 5.
Okay.
Wow.
For me, I still have Boston as 1, even though they had a tough week. I have Milwaukee 2. Memphis, I know they lost a couple, 3. Denver 4, Brooklyn 5, and Cleveland just out at 6. Yeah. Again, you know, the Lakers still struggle. The NBA is a real crapshoot at this point. Boys, yep. I think, once again, we had a nice, quick, short show. Yep. listen, if the Mets are going to make these signings, it's going to make it hard for us, and the NFL's tough to touch on, so and skip a lot of things. So, well, any other points before we wrap it up?
No more soccer talk for the rest of the year.
Yeah, we're done with soccer now.
For another 4 years, probably.
G, anything else?
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Yep. So, again, we are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren, along with Kevin and Gino. Hope you guys enjoy the show. We like doing it. Please check us out on social media. We post on Facebook a lot. Some things are inappropriate, but we think they're funny. Some things may not be, whatever. We put our college picks up there, put some stuff. It transfers over to Instagram from time to time as well. You can download the podcast anywhere you get your podcast, whether it be an Apple product, whether it be Spotify, whether it be TuneIn or anywhere else. We just want your feedback. Let us know what you like, what you don't like. Share our stuff. We want to get this thing out to as many people as possible. We want to get everybody listening to a 100-minute podcast every single week. So without further ado, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and may your sports be with you.
This has been the Sports Kings from Queens.